Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for May 2, 2008. This week, we're going to talk about radiation, why astronauts are especially at risk, and a promising new way to fight radiation poisoning. We'll also answer a listener's question about that great radiation generator in the sky, the sun. But first, while there are many stars in the sky, there's just one in a laboratory. Suzanne's here to tell us about it and the laser that made it possible.
Yes, but not just any laser. If you want to create a miniature star right on your tabletop, you're going to need a laser with a petawatt of power.
That's a quadrillion watts or 1,000 trillion watts.
That's physicist Todd Dittmeyer of the University of Texas at Austin. He says the Texas petawatt laser stores up this huge amount of energy and later releases it as a pulse of light lasting only a tenth of a trillionth of a second.
So for a short period of time, over a very small area, we have the brightest light in the universe.
He says the laser heats matter to temperatures exceeding that of the center of most stars, allowing scientists to observe astronomical events in miniature.
One of the things we like to do with a big laser like this is create in miniature an energetic explosion like a supernova and study the physics and the dynamics of that miniature explosion. And it turns out that the equations which describe these huge astronomical events are in fact just the same equations which describe our laser-driven explosions. And so if we can learn something about one, we learn something about the other.
But he says eventually, the world's most powerful laser could be used to ignite controlled fusion reactions for energy production.
Thanks, Suzanne. Next, Justin Warner reports on the health consequences of human space travel.
Compared to smoking or eating poorly, most of us don't have to worry about radiation from outer space as a cancer risk. But for astronauts who venture beyond the protection of Earth's atmosphere, it's a real concern. To assess the feasibility of long space trips, like a manned mission to Mars, scientists like Albert Farnese at Georgetown University's Lombardi Comprehensive Cancer Center are taking a closer look at the high-energy radiation particles found in space.
These are radiations that are qualitatively different from what we see, like when somebody gets an X-ray or if they're in the A-bomb survivor cohort and others. So the question arises, is this relatively novel space radiation compared to terrestrial or Earth radiation, are there any particular risk, or can we just use whatever numbers we have for the human Earth radiation epidemiology where the numbers are good?
It's hard to know if space radiation has harmed astronauts thus far, since the population of people who've actually been in space is so small and their exposure time has been relatively short. So Farnese and his colleagues have been studying the long-term effects of high-energy radiation on mice. Those mice end up with lots of free radical chemicals, which are associated with cancer, in their digestive tracts, and they also show signs of premature aging. Farnese says the next step is to find out how this may affect astronaut health given the time and exposure they're likely to face.
And then, of course, a longer-term issue is, are there preventative agents that could be used that would reduce their risk?
Unfortunately, he says it's not as simple as building a radiation shield on the craft. That's because an effective shield would have to be so dense that it would make it impractical to launch the craft into space.
Thanks, Justin. Drugs that counteract the effects of radiation poisoning could be one possible solution, and medical researchers have already developed one for short-term exposure. As you probably know, chemotherapy and radiation can be powerful weapons against cancer, but in doing so, they harm healthy cells. Cells of the immune system and GI tract are especially vulnerable. Instead of repairing the damage they receive during chemo or radiation treatment, these cells respond by committing cellular suicide. This according to Roswell Park Cancer Institute researcher Andre Gudkoff.
Damage which is caused to them during cancer treatment actually limits our ability to escalate the dose or to repeat treatment with frequency which may be sometimes needed.
This cell suicide is called apoptosis. Tumor cells have mutations that make them resistant to apoptosis. Gudkoff and his colleagues recently harnessed this property to create a new drug.
We decided, why can't we learn from the tumor? Why can't we just imitate tumor tricks pharmacologically, making the drug which would temporarily and reversibly convert normal cells to the degree of resistance to apoptosis similar to that which is the property of the tumor cell.
Called Protecta CBLB502, the drug is made from a modified bacterial protein. When given in conjunction with radiation or chemotherapy, it keeps healthy cells from dying during treatment, after which they revert back to normal. The drug also helps cells heal from radiation and chemotherapy treatments. Outside the hospital, Gudkoff says the drug could also be used to protect military personnel and first responders from the effects of ionizing radiation in the case of a nuclear catastrophe. He says the drug is now being considered for clinical trials by the FDA, which Gudkoff hopes to begin later this year. Finally this week, Suzanne answers a listener's question about the sun.
Students in Geneva Schumacher's 8th grade class at North Royalton Middle School in Ohio wrote to ask whether the sun will ever burn itself out. We turn to Terry Kuchera, a solar physicist at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland.
The sun will eventually burn out. It'll put on a really big show before that, though.
She says after it uses up all the hydrogen in its core, it'll start burning up the outer shell. But don't lie awake nights worrying about it.
We expect in about 7 billion years, the sun will have become a red giant star.
After becoming a red giant, the sun will expand and possibly even burn up the Earth. After that, it'll start burning helium, shrink, and then expand again. Over time, it'll lose its outer atmosphere and shrink into a white dwarf, slowly fading out.
Thanks, Suzanne, and that's our cue to fade out.
But before we do, don't forget to submit your science questions so we can answer them on the air. No subject is too mundane or too outlandish for us to investigate. Call us at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT or write to us at www.scienceupdate.com. If we use your question, you'll win a Science Update Smarten Up mug.
And that's our show for this week. Next week, we're going to talk about new trends in conservation, from mapping the life of Madagascar to staving off global warming by planting trees. Until then, stay up to date by tuning into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.